Hello, nerds, and welcome to the Engadget podcast. This is episode 33, Losing My Edge, joined this week by a very familiar face in Dana Woolman, carb queen of the Engadget realm.
Hi.
I always love your giggles. They make me very
and
happy.
And I do have the giggles today.
You do. It's been a very giggly morning for
yes.
you. We also have a fresh new face, Evan Rogers, newest member of the Engadget family.
Hello.
Why don't you introduce yourself to the people?
Yeah, no, I am Evan Rogers. That is my name, and I am the new social media manager for this publication.
How was your first, what are we on, week two?
We are on week two, that's right.
So how's the first 2 weeks being on the team so far?
I mean, it's been great. The team is, like, incredible. Very high energy.
There's a lot of weird sides to your job, one of them being gadget pornographer, basically.
Oh,
you just,
God.
Like, he's the guy putting up all of those really slick, well-shot photos on Instagram.
Is that like a thing you love? Like, be honest with me. You can be upfront here. Like, that's like a thing you're really into.
I was right. I brought my tripod. Like, I, you know,
he's like,
we've
where's
got
your
lights.
Camera? Yeah. Where are your gadgets?
Which drawers are the cameras in? I got work to do.
Where's the closet filled with shiny things that have buttons and
exactly,
lights on them?
Exactly. Listen, the people love it.
It's true.
It gets the people going.
I gotta say, I enjoy gadget porn, but I'm also a guy who really loves, like, things that have lots of buttons and stuff.
Yeah.
So I'll be honest, like, when I see, like, a nice phone, it's not so great. But, like, you show me, like, a big piece of stereo equipment that's got, like, knobs and sliders and shit, like, or, like, a synthesizer, I'm, like, all over it.
I think that's the problem with stuff that we have right now. It's very shiny, which is great.
Yes.
But, you know, texturally, I mean, especially when it comes to photography, like, I want the buttons and dials.
Yeah. Phones are, you know, honestly a little boring sometimes.
Well, I mean, we just put up the, it's funny that you mentioned this, we just put up the picture on Instagram of the Galaxy Tab S3, and, like, the tablet is cool. The tablet is, like, a good tablet, but the like, visually interesting part is the keyboard.
Yeah.
So, if, like, in all the pictures I took for that, the Instagram we ended up putting up was, like, the one that you should put up, which is the whole thing. But the cool shots were all, like, of the keyboard and, like, the.
And it's funny because Sherlyn, the reviewer, did not actually like the keyboard that much. I think she wrote a sentence like, "I was able to tolerate it most of the time."
I mean, yeah, functionality, who knows? But just in terms of. I mean, but a tablet is just, sometimes it's just a rectangle.
Yeah. I mean, and to be clear, I'm not saying necessarily that our photos are boring. Just, like, as a product category, like, phones and tablets, they've kind of, like, reached this, like, point where there's not too much of a difference between most of them. Like, they're all kind of the same. They're glass rectangles that run apps.
That iPhone in the office was fun the other day. You missed that.
I did. Yeah. I miss most things that happen in the office, to be clear.
I just want to put this out there. I just don't like it in pictures, but in real life it actually does look, like, really cool.
I would prefer it if the front hat were in black and not white.
Gosh.
We've had an intense debate in the office about this. What color scheme Apple should have gone with.
And
does anyone know why?
We have opinions on,
like,
other things
why?
Too, but yeah.
We have opinions on other things too, but most importantly is the color scheme.
I am truly unclear on why they went with white.
Yeah, it's like a Swiss flag kind of thing.
It is like it's got a very, like, candy cane Christmas vibe going on because of that white front. Also, I have to imagine that they, like, sell a lot more of the black ones, and so they have, like, I don't know, higher inventory numbers of.
This is
speculating,
like,
now, but
a maybe
they
sled of an iPhone.
Maybe the issue is that they sell so many more black ones, so they have all of the white faces left over, just, like, sitting in a warehouse, and it's like, what do we do with it? Slap it on this phone instead.
I don't know. You'd think that the monumental rise of rose gold would have something to do with that.
Don't give us anything, guys. We're really ungrateful.
It's true.
Yeah.
And unappreciative.
By the way, before we move on, is that new iPhone in the office currently? Can I go play with it and look at it?
On air?
Not on air, just in general.
After,
when we're done recording
this. I think is harboring it.
Mm. So I have to hope that he comes into the office with it.
Or find him.
And then mug him.
Yes. Hey, who did I threaten to mug last time? I threaten a lot of violence against people on the show.
I think it was Nate, but either way, people you could probably take in a fight.
Oh, I threatened. No, it was Devendra. I threatened to jump him for a Switch.
You could also.
Oh, fair. I mean, honestly, fair.
Yeah.
Because it's your only source now.
Yeah, I really wanted to play Zelda, and I didn't want to pay $360 to do it.
Well, you can't now.
Yeah, it's true. So we're running one of our themed weeks here on the site. We're doing Adult Week, and by adult, we don't mean not safe for work stuff. This is, you know, how to kind of act like a grown-up on the internet, online, how to deal with, like, the sort of pressures that come with our modern technological age and all of that nonsense. And also just kind of, like, self-improvement through technology, which I think is something that gets a lot of lip service from people, but
totally
is often fails unless you approach it properly. I think, you know, correct me if you guys disagree, but I think like this whole like sort of technological stuff, like apps to make yourself a better person, really kind of lowers the bar to entry to where nobody feels like they have to put any effort in. And so it's like, oh, I'm gonna pick up this app to like train my brain to make me smarter, and then it just kind of becomes like a thing they do on the commute to work like once or twice, only half pay attention, and then never use the app again.
Totally. I mean, like, you know, the ebook like education market has just been like popping for like the last 5 years or whatever, and then like self-help books have been the thing since the beginning of time. But, you know.
Well, then there's the internet. I mean, not even just apps specifically, but just for all the crap that's on the internet, all the stuff you can actually, useful stuff,
yeah,
you can actually learn.
And I mean, learning to identify the useful stuff versus like the garbage, mm-hmm, is also kind of difficult. And I think like an important part of becoming like a grown up and, you know, the whole digital literacy thing.
Truly, the struggle is real.
So, I mean, one of the things that I sort of inspired us to do this week was my own experiences becoming more comfortable in the kitchen.
Yes.
And that was mostly through what I learned on the internet and crowdsourcing on social media.
Yeah, and this is something we didn't get to write about, unfortunately. You did not do a piece on that this week, but I want to dig into it. I actually want to talk about that quite a bit. I don't think any of us wrote any pieces for this theme week on the show, unfortunately.
The perfect cast.
I mean, I guess technically I did, in that I wrote a piece introducing the concept of Adult Week.
I don't think a piece on how I came to subscribe to Martha Stewart's newsletter would be very on brand for us.
I don't know about that. I think you could make it work.
Yeah.
But I mean, all right, so hang on. Before we get to that, because before we really dive down that rabbit hole, let's kind of just talk a little bit about the sort of genesis of this. And I mean, what's the sort of reasoning behind doing these sorts of themed weeks too? Like, and not like an insidery media way, but like...
Traffic.
Yeah, I mean, let's just say is outside of that, you know, obviously there's lulls in the news cycle and you have to fill that space with something and, you know.
But, I mean, I think readers enjoy it, but we enjoy it. These are the stories I enjoy editing most. And I think writers enjoy not only writing them, but the brainstorming process.
Well, this is, I think, one of the strengths of these and why these sorts of things always tend to do pretty well in terms of the quality of the content, in terms of traffic, is that this gives people on staff to kind of break out their expertise and passion in a way that they don't normally get to do during the news cycle. Like when you're attached to reporting on things that are going on and worrying about whatever the newest phone is or whatever FCC regulation is getting struck down that week, you don't get to really dive into things about like how you've made the conscious decision as a father to keep your child off the internet and stop sharing and not share photos of them so that they don't have this record a mile long by the time they turn 16.
So I think that's what I loved about this theme week. Theme weeks in general are such a good opportunity to go deep on a topic, but this theme week, being an adult online, was just really great because a bunch of people had very personal but also like directly actionable
and
stories.
Those were some of the surprising pitches we got.
Yeah. I mean, you know, we haven't published everything yet. By the time this will go up, I think we still have a couple of stories in the bag when this episode airs. But I mean, like we've got a good mix of like servicey kind of things, like, you know, how to kind of protect yourself and, you know, navigate the dangerous world of the internet. But we've also got like good things, like Dan Cooper's piece about his decision not to put photos of his child online. We've got Nicole Lee's piece about learning, you know, how to like step her fashion game up and like move away from the t-shirt and jeans of college.
That resonated with me.
I mean, me too. Like, it's a thing, like, I know, like, clearly I'm, you know, a little bit of a dandy at this point, I guess would be a way to put it.
You are on camera formal right now.
Yeah, but, like, growing up, like, when I was in high school, I wore literally nothing but black t-shirts and jeans. Like, it was just, like, Nine Inch Nails t-shirts.
Terrence, that's so much better than what I wore in high school.
I feel like goth Terrence needs to make a comeback for an episode. Or two.
I don't know that I can pull it off. I'm fairly certain I don't have jeans baggy enough for that anymore, and I'm not going out and buying any.
Oh, I mean, you gotta update the style. I mean, yeah, you know.
And I definitely don't have any band t-shirts left in my repertoire. I might have some beer t-shirts. Do those work?
I'm sure I can find you a subscription box.
Of just band t-shirts?
Yes.
I mean, if I could dig up my t-shirt from the first Family Values tour and wear it on the air, I would 100% do that. Just Korn and Rammstein, guys.
Note to self.
I actually think there's a photo of me in that shirt on the internet somewhere.
We will find it.
I think it might be on the site.
But no, the dressing like an adult one, I did recently look through, like, I wanted to know. I know some people who are like on the Blue Apron train. Mm-hmm. They love it. They sponsor a lot of podcasts. Not a sponsor. But I really wanted to know if those fashion boxes, like, really could take you where you wanted to go. And it's actually complicated. Like, there's a lot of options out there, and also, like, everyone's, like, fashion is just such an individual thing.
I'm afraid of putting my money there. I feel like I could easily do a lot of damage.
Well, it's designed to be, most of them are designed to be like the Netflix DVD subscription where you just have, they send you all three DVDs and you just have them forever. They get like $2,000 out of you.
I managed to avoid really subscribing to any of those boxes.
Yeah.
Not that I wasn't tempted by them, but I did have a Frank and Oak subscription.
Oh,
I use that term loosely because it's not really a proper subscription. But basically, like, once a month previously, they've changed their model now. I don't really know how it works. Also, they've changed the cut of all of their clothes, and I can't fit in any of them anymore. But
classic.
Terrible. They also put spandex in everything now, which is just, like,
yeah, so
I'm not a fan.
That's, as a, you know, this piece mentions Uniqlo, and as, like, the world's largest Uniqlo fanboy.
Because it's great.
Oh, it's amazing. It's also, it's, I know somebody who's a writer from Racked, and she always said that Uniqlo is the place where men go to get it done because they just don't have clothes. They shop in these, like, ridiculous cycles where they just won't buy clothes.
Totally respectable. Yeah.
Totally respectable. You just go into Uniqlo and you're like, yo, I'm about to drop $600. let's obtain. But they do put stretchy material in a lot of their stuff now.
They do.
Which is not great for me. Listen. If I was a slim, tall man, my gosh, it'd be so great. Not reality.
But it's
wait, isn't it like meatier people who wouldn't need the stretch?
No. Because you want the stretch so, like, the clothes will cling to your slim, slender figure.
Yeah, so that you can buy them slim, but you can still move around in them a little bit without so much restriction. I'll say this: I'm sure material science has improved somewhat over the past couple of years, but I owned one.
That's fair.
I've owned one pair of stretch jeans in my life, and you could only wear them once.
Yeah.
Because after one day of wear, they were insanely. It looked like I was wearing a diaper under my jeans. I was like, well, these have to go back in the dryer on high so that I can shrink them.
So that's not true of the ones I'm wearing. I don't want to get us off topic. Just. I was complaining to these, speaking of dressing like an adult and what the internet has taught me, I was complaining to these guys before we started filming that I forgot when I put on these pants today and brought them to the gym that it was my first time wearing them since I put them in the dryer. So you guys watching on YouTube are lucky that you're seeing me buttoned up fully over here. I can dress like a grown-up. Yeah.
Cheers.
I've got everything under control, including my fly.
Man, So yeah, there's just so much good stuff on the site this week. Definitely, please go read it. We'll leave all of the links in the you know the description. The spot.
Show notes. Get that in there.
Yeah, and definitely need to give a shout out to Eric Sagan, who did all the art for this week, and the art is amazing. It is so good. I love it so much. So yeah, just relish in the art. Just like roll around in it for a little while. Print
roll
it out,
around in the
print,
art.
Print out copies of the articles, put them on the floor, and then roll around in them. Just
Just
get down on there.
So what did you guys think about this this story that Chris did? I don't know how to drive and I may never have to learn.
I relate to that pretty strongly.
Yeah, I thought that was Chris really and
I
fascinating.
I envy her.
Chris and I have some things in common. We both grew up in Brooklyn. And I actually do have a license, but I haven't driven since I got my license nearly 12 years ago.
Mm-hmm. So you might as well as not have
I'm effectively a non-driver.
I would not trust you behind the wheel of a car. Just
I wouldn't
to be
trust
clear.
You. No, there's a reason I don't drive the CES clown car van.
Oh yeah.
Every year.
So John Turi is the one who normally drives the CES van every year. Mm. I only discovered last year that he had not driven in years before going to CES. And I was like, what? It's like, no, he's like, I lives in Brooklyn. You don't need to drive, really. He doesn't own a car. And so we dragged him out to the desert in Las Vegas and put him behind the wheel
Turi's
of a giant.
He's also a native New Yorker.
Yeah. He is not a native New Yorker. He is a New Yorker at heart, but he's not a native New Yorker. He's not born here. I know. Do you feel lied to?
Yes.
You can confront him later. Okay. I mean, he is as a very judgmental native New Yorker, he's one of the few people I will say is a New Yorker despite the fact that he was not born here. He is New York through and through. Like, for real.
Yeah. I haven't been here long enough, but I would believe it.
I mean, Turi's been here, I think, for 20 plus years.
Whoa.
He's been here since the mid-80s, at least.
He must have a great apartment.
I've only ever seen photos of it, but it is a very nice apartment.
Fair.
And he has a stunning vinyl collection.
Mm, I can see that. So, yeah, I mean, this... I just recently spent a bunch of time in, rural Tennessee, and it's really interesting because everybody kind of complains about New York City drivers. And in my experience, New York City drivers, while they may seem just anybody who's new to the city, they may seem like crazy people. They are on if you drive in New York, you're on high alert all the time, and you're probably not going more than 30 miles an hour. So it seems really hectic, and the traffic is really intense. But you know, everybody is looking out for a completely random pedestrian who's decided they want to walk through traffic for no reason. In Tennessee, though. Especially in the outskirts of Nashville, the design of the highway system and of the roadway system that leads off the highways is really very puzzling. And from talking with friends and talking with family who are down there, the number of accidents that happen is actually really intense. You can be driving with someone and they can point out where a 5-car pileup happened right over here because the city has never updated an off ramp to accommodate really high speeds.
Yeah.
People will come around it at really high speeds and they're just not designed for that. So while I was missing New York, New York is great and all, but in terms of just never having to drive, oh my gosh, the highway situation there is so bad. And if we could some automated vehicles, there's all kinds of different tiers that they talk about now in terms of if you're a New Yorker and you want to go to Jersey, just getting into the car, the self-driving car just on the highway and then finding some other kind of solution after you make it off the highway. I'll tell you what, man, in Nashville, that would be incredible.
Oh, I mean,
so many lives would be saved.
So you're saying you trust machines more than the good people of Tennessee?
Oh my God. Yes. Hands down, money okay. on it. Run for office on that.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
I'm lining up to buy the first automated car. For so many reasons.
Yes.
Just in general, I hate driving. but also this is a
That's the thing. I actually love driving, but I am terrified by other people.
Well, that's the thing, is I hate driving in New York. I should be
That's
really
not
clear
very fun.
Or Jersey. Jersey is just as bad, if not worse, under certain circumstances, depending. You know, I do a lot of road trips with my wife and stuff for vacation just because it's cheap and stuff, and it's a great way to see a bunch of places. And that I'm usually okay with. Like, I'm fine, like, long stretches when you're, like, not worried about getting to a place on time. That's
fine.
But
what if you could also not actually drive, but just ride?
Well, so, like, we were down – we actually went to Nashville not last year. I think the year before. But we also
did – survived.
Yeah. But we also did a couple of days on the Bourbon Trail.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And I was like –
nice.
We got
– highly recommend that for anyone, by the
way.
Oh,
my God.
It's so good.
It's the best. But, I mean, we got three places under our belt in 2 days. Mm. But I had to drive. You cannot do more than two distilleries in a day and drive.
Pro
really.
Tip, you get smashed.
Like,
you get absolutely smashed.
We
you don't have to, but you will.
You probably will. We walked out of the second place and we're like, we should probably sit in the car for a little while. Just like, take a breather.
Yeah. It's really, I mean, it's such a fun time. But yeah, you, I mean, you can't just like sip on like 100 different whiskeys.
And, no.
Yeah, I don't think we're at a point where you can live in every part of the country and not be a driver, but I think the stigma of not being a driver is maybe starting to go away. Mm-hmm. I don't think being an adult necessarily means having a license to the extent it did
totally.
In our parents' generation.
Yeah. No, not at all. And I mean, I live in New York, but I live on Staten Island, which is very car heavy. You have to drive. We also have an absurd amount of cars, I think, like last check it
like
was like
you have an absurd
I don't have an absurd amount of cars.
You've
just
got
like
13 cars.
I have a car. But I think the last study said something like the average house on Staten Island, average household has 2.5 cars. Like it's like they're
that
like children
sense.
At this point.
Yeah.
So there's cars everywhere, traffic is atrocious, and it's all of the worst parts of New York drivers, basically.
Yeah.
Like that like real aggressiveness and all of that with a really bizarre sort of sense of entitlement and that lack of attention that you get out in, you know,
oh, yeah.
the other place.
100%.
Because it's not as much of a pedestrian place.
Yeah.
So, I mean, like, it's an atrocious place to drive. I have atrocious road rage because of it.
It does. It is a circular thing like that.
But we also have our public transportation system on Staten Island is not very good.
Really?
So the rest of New York City, service by trains, you're great. You're solid no matter where you want to go pretty much.
What's crazy from an infrastructure standpoint is the fact that you cannot bike over the Verrazano Bridge, this huge famous bridge connecting Brooklyn to Staten Island.
There's
no bike path.
There no pedestrian path either?
Nope.
No.
Let's not talk about the Verrazano Bridge. That will take us down.
Uh-oh.
He's
getting red with anger. Look at this guy.
Well, it's
Robert Moses is the worst thing that ever happened to New York City, and specifically Staten Island.
He's pointing. Look at that. He's
pointing.
I love the Verrazano Bridge. It's a very beautiful bridge. Robert Moses destroyed it. There should have been a train. There should have been bike paths. There should have been pedestrians. But Robert Moses loves cars too much.
He's mad.
I am mad. I want a train into Brooklyn.
Yeah,
it's really dumb that there's not a train over that bridge in Brooklyn.
Did you guys go to the Hyperloop? Like demo thing,
that
was
Engadget
like last year.
Did,
yes,
but not us personally.
Okay, I just think it's so funny because that is such a high flying goal, and it's so sci-fi and it's so cool. But like, if you live in New York, though, like the only cool technology based like infrastructure hacks that we have are like definitely going to be self driving cars.
Yeah,
like we can't even get the L train to work.
No. Before we disappear down this rabbit hole anymore of me yelling
infrastructure, about... Infrastructure, guys.
Yeah, infrastructure and public transit.
Public transportation. The people want to know.
I could do an entire hour and a half of just me yelling about public transportation.
I feel like, what's the opposite of a safe word, a trigger word?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
Verrazano Bridge, bikes, and Robert Moses. Like,
yeah, we're like venturing towards I'm walking here.
Robert Moses is definitely a... Last thing I'll say about Robert Moses before we move on. There is a Mount Moses on Staten Island, which is literally a pile of rubble left over from building the Staten Island Expressway that they dumped in the middle of the woods. Like, it's like...
Sounds cool.
I mean, it's kind of cool,
but
it's...
Take photos of that.
It's not like... it's not an an honor that they named it after him. It's like they call it after him because it's like, you're a piece of garbage who left a bunch of garbage on our island. Thanks.
Thank you.
It's literally just like piles of rebar and concrete. I will leave it at that.
Okay.
But we should kind of dig into, I think, some of our own experiences, kind of learning to be an adult and act like an adult and do all of these things. I don't know about you guys. Not in a huge rush to grow up for most of my life, and kind of eventually coming around to the fact that I have to be like a functional adult and stop like picking fights with people on the internet and dress like a human when I leave my house and maybe learn to be self-sufficient.
Well, it's interesting. The impetus to, I mean, like, how do I even describe this? I was freelancing and consulting for a while, and I needed to approach my clients with like a level of professionalism is not the right word. It's like, have your shit together-ism.
Yeah.
You know, like, know exactly what is going to happen, like how to produce on time, like what the package is going to contain, and like how you bill for it, and like billing for it, and like the contract and that sort of thing. Those are things that I actually like completely turned over control to like internet services for. There's like from the contract, like I sourced the contract from a bunch of different places and kind of like smushed a bunch of them together just in terms of just because, I mean, when I started, I was like, how do you agree to transact things?
Yeah. So, I mean, that's one of the, I think, sort of interesting things. I freelanced for a while, too. And before the internet, how did you find out how to do this stuff?
I don't know.
Like, I remember very distinctly.
I literally don't.
The first time somebody asked me to invoice them, and I was sitting my basement apartment, like, I don't even know what that means.
Exactly. Like, what even is that? And the funny thing is that I used FreshBooks, also another frequent podcast sponsor.
Yeah.
Hashtag not sponsored again. I used FreshBooks, and FreshBooks, like, is actually very cool. But a lot of places have, they just can't accept it. Because they have like an autoresponder or some kind of like FreshBooks will send out an email with an invoice in it, and like if it doesn't land in a human being's inbox, it like isn't going to work.
Yeah.
So like tried and true, like I just found a bunch of like literally within Google Docs, you can search for other docs and like public resources, and I just was like invoice template. And actually there are a bunch of them. They're not the prettiest thing in the world, but they have produced every single time. And it's crazy that that's just, like, a resource that's, like, A, baked into Google Docs, B, freely available. And when you combine that with just, like, a bunch of people kind of donating their contracts, like,
yeah.
I wasn't able to cross that knowledge gap alone in terms of, like, how do you go from zero?
Yeah.
Like, what is an invoice? When do you send it? What is the contract? What should be in it?
What information needs to be in there?
That was just very manual Google searching.
Mm-hmm.
But once I knew what was required, like, finding out, like putting the pieces together to put that to like make that happen was actually really straightforward.
Your Google searches, your how-to Google searches are less embarrassing than mine. I feel like.
How do I money?
How do I money?
Still, I feel like it could be even better.
Yeah, and I think that's like a good piece of advice too, though, is to look in some of these places that might not seem as obvious. Like, I think people forget that there are templates in Google Docs that can go search through and use.
Also, I mean, Microsoft Word, like, it's so crazy. It sounds like the most 1995 thing to mention on a technology podcast in 2017. But like, you know, Word is actually like kind of expensive. And like for that, you get like every kind of like template you could possibly imagine.
It is a very useful, very comprehensive program.
Resumes, I mean, invoices, just everything.
Yeah. And, you know, I used FreshBooks too for a while when I was freelancing, and it is very pretty. It's very self-contained and all of that. But I think there's something to be said for going and looking at those templates and pulling it all together yourself and actually like getting into like sort of the nitty gritty details of how it works as opposed
to
just handing over the keys. I think handing over the keys to somebody to just do it for you once you understand the basics of how it works is fine.
Yeah.
But actually understanding some of that like inner working and figuring out how it works for yourself is useful.
I mean, that's so like FreshBooks falls into a really uncanny valley of things where like I would say tons of internet services actually fall into this category where like if I remember correctly, FreshBooks is $10 a month.
I don't remember. It was free when I was using it, or at least for what I was using it for. I didn't have enough billing, probably.
That is the thing, though, is that like so many of these services that will kind of help you offload some of the responsibility that you would kind of like either do personally, mm-hmm. like in terms of like having your own filing cabinet and just literally having files in a printer, or having an accountant, you know, something like that. There's really like a disconnect between like how much utility. Like in order to get $10 a month out of FreshBooks, you'd have to be like slinging invoices constantly. And if you are, it is actually very cool because if you can get that to work, it will organize everything for you and you like your taxes will be significantly easier.
Yeah.
But, you know, if you're doing a couple of things a week, like you could probably buy a printer.
Yeah. Like if you're a freelance writer who's like
go to IKEA, go to the Container Store, buy a filing cabinet.
Just take care of it.
They still make printers.
Yeah, those things exist. I don't own one anymore, but I know they exist. They're out there somewhere.
You can actually buy printers at Apple stores still.
Ooh, there you go, people.
Yeah.
So we touched on this before, Dana. You've been also kind of learning how to navigate things and become, you know, a little bit more self-sufficient with the aid of the internet.
Yeah.
So we've actually discussed it a little bit before on the podcast, which
right.
is your decision. Yeah, I can't speak today. Decision to learn to cook, which I'm 100% behind, by the way.
So it started just as me realizing one weekend that cooking, and I started with a recipe that I had cooked many times, just not in years, remembering that cooking could be relaxing and fun, and it was a good way to fill up and improve what had been sort of a dreary Sunday for me. I think mm-hmm. for whatever reason, I wasn't in a great mood that day, but I was in a much better mood after that. And there's a whole other discussion in terms of, this isn't tech related, but in terms of how to be an adult, in terms of how to manage and regulate your own happiness and figuring out what works. But well, this worked for me.
You've got to unplug and do something that's not staring at Twitter all day.
I think so, yeah. But so it became me just generally saying, I want to get more comfortable in the kitchen, turned into a pledge to try one new recipe a week. And social media has helped me stay accountable because I've posted so many weeks in a row that I feel like I need to keep at it.
I mean, I watch. I know last week you made mustard and... what scones?
Cheddar mustard scones.
Which I missed out on.
Oh my gosh.
Which I'm very sad about.
I'll make more. The problem was I made a batch of 8 and then let my family eat half of them before coming to the office, which was probably not the best idea.
I tried one.
How dare you let your family enjoy the fruits of your labor, Dana?
But yeah, it's been an adventure, and it's been fun. But I have had to make some embarrassing Google searches, among other things. I've also had to buy some gear.
Okay. Yeah.
But, I mean, at one point I did Google, how do you separate an egg yolk?
Not an intuitive thing.
I watched a video on YouTube, but I was so glad that I didn't have to ask a real person.
Yeah. I mean, but see, that's like one of those like weird skills that if you haven't done it before, it's not necessarily immediately intuitive, and there's a whole bunch of different ways to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Do you do the shell method?
No, I just got my hand dirty. I just...
you did the finger method.
Yeah.
Which is also acceptable.
But how great is it that you can just have a relatively anonymous search on YouTube for just like, how do I just do this?
Yeah.
It's so great. You don't have to like, yeah. For me, that would be like calling my dad who loves to cook. And I'd be like, how do you separate an egg? And he's like, you can't ever call here again. Like,
there's been some simple stuff that I think is widely known to people who cook, but it's been news to me. For instance, one of the few cooking failures I've had so far were these cookies that ended up undercooked. I did the dough correctly, but just I learned that if you have an old oven like mine, the temperature in the oven might not match what the knob says.
Yeah.
And everyone else was like, oh, yeah, that happens with old ovens. You can buy an oven thermometer. I'm like, that's a thing.
Yep.
So it's been a learning process.
Oh, man, but kitchen gear is cool.
So it's I want to make a shout out to Sweet Home, and not just because we syndicate some of their reviews, but they do a really good job with home and kitchen gear. And it's not stuff that Engadget itself reviews, but they haven't steered me wrong so far
in terms of. What gear have you had to go out and buy?
Oh, gosh. I bought a Dutch oven, a cooling rack, a measuring cup for liquids.
Okay. You had a really understocked kitchen, huh?
Yeah, and I also had some stuff that was in my drawer collecting dust, and I was like, what does this do?
Did you then have to take a photo of it and tweet it to ask people what it was?
No.
You weren't getting that bad?
Okay, do you want to hear about my most embarrassing
Google search? I do. That is totally. I 100%
This was like a trick question, because I know how to use a can opener. You like where this is going.
Continue. I'm already super excited about this.
Well, just I'm overselling the story. Okay. Except that it was the can opener was broken, and it took me a minute or two or five to realize that the can opener was broken and missing a crucial piece.
You were just sitting there going, why isn't this working?
So I did Google how to use a can opener. It wasn't because I didn't know, but just because I was starting to question myself. And then finally realized...
Yes, you're gaslighting yourself.
Realized this is fucked up. I have a useless can opener.
But, like, for real, though, why are can openers always broken?
I don't know. I've had the same can opener for, like, 15 years.
I mean, okay, so if you have, like, a 1920s, like, all steel can
opener. Nope, this is a piece of crap plastic KitchenAid I bought when I moved into my first apartment.
I've never had a can opener that wasn't broken.
Yeah.
Like, you guys, hit me up on Twitter. Like, if you're out there listening and you have two can openers in your drawer where you spin the thing and nothing is actually mechanically connected to anything, I want to hear from you. Please send us a picture of your useless can opener that you still have for no reason.
But you don't see this in my Instagram photos. You see the finished product. You don't see me having sliced open my thumb trying to open a can of stewed tomatoes.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that just sounds gory.
Yeah, I mean, those are the things you don't need to share, but we all know that you're cutting yourself and burning yourself for sure.
Yeah,
cooking. I mean, it's just a messy thing.
This is not tech related, but you got to enjoy Tales from Me last week, where I burned myself multiple times during the course of the day while making beer.
Terrence was working from home and working on his beer at the same time. Which, what could go wrong?
Lots of things. I'm not a bright person.
Did any beer come out of it?
Yeah, I mean it's sitting at home in the keg.
Boom. Then that's the sacrifice you make.
I did also spray my entire face and torso with scalding hot water.
Ew.
Which was required that I walk away for a little while and take a breather because I was in quite a bit of pain. But that is not tech related. That's just me being dumb.
Oh man. But I will say it's so nice to be able to just buy food. Just to eat it. It's great.
You like it.
The New York City way forever.
So wait, Dana, have you thought about using any of these like subscription service things like Blue Apron or anything?
I thought of it, and I'm glad that I didn't. I think I feel more satisfaction in having taught myself how to cook. Also, now that I've read a little more on the economics of Blue Apron, I'm a little turned off to it, just in terms of what the cost per meal comes out to.
Oh, yeah, it's
Whereas
ridiculous.
I can cook up a large batch of food either in my casserole dish or my slow cooker, and have enough food to feed me and my friends or family, and then still have leftovers.
Yeah.
I the cost per meal thing really turned me off.
Yeah. Well, I mean...
No,
go ahead.
I was just going to ask, like, from the cost per meal, it's ridiculous. But one of the things that they at least include in their marketing is that it teaches you how to cook. Do you guys think that that's, like, realistic? Or is, like... Because I've never been a part of one of these subscription things, so I would imagine that If everything comes like diced and in a bag and you just kind of combine it, it doesn't seem very educational.
It doesn't come diced and in a bag, I don't think. I think it's you get like the whole proper ingredients. Like you
That's
have
good.
The prep, but everything's pre-measured.
Okay.
What I'll say I haven't used the service, but I've looked at their recipes, because you can find most of the recipes just on their website.
Yeah.
And browse through them. The thing I'll say is that the reason I don't think it's really an effective way of learning to cook is that they're straight recipes that don't really explain anything.
Gotcha. It is like a IKEA build of materials.
Yeah. So, like, if you already have the basic skills, then you're probably fine. But this isn't, you know, Blue Apron isn't going to teach you the finer points of, like, searing a steak without, you know, leaving the interior raw.
How great would that be, though? Someone comes over to your house and just they're like, listen.
I am super curious about certain food gadgets. Like, I'm not at the point where I would use a sous vide to cook perfectly cooked steak, but I think I'll get there at some point. I want to try out something.
I did
like
do that.
That
for the first time fairly recently.
It was delicious. I still never had it.
It was delicious. I feel a little bit bad about it.
Mm-hmm.
It was a point of pride that I didn't need a sous vide cooker to make a perfect steak. It's like, I know how to cook a steak. I'm handy in the kitchen. I don't need this shit.
I could never do that. That's impossible.
But I got a really nice, my parents bought me like a really nice like dry aged steak for Christmas, and it was like super thick, and I was like, oh, this is going to be a nightmare to get right. And I was like, I just don't feel like fighting with it. I have a sous vide. I can throw it in a thing, make sure it's perfectly medium rare, and when it's dinner time, sear it, and I'm just going to do it.
Yeah,
and I walked away and went, I'm never going to do this. I'm always going
to
do this.
My embarrassing thing, though, is that if I use that, I'm going to have to Google how do you vacuum seal a bag.
So,
I was going to ask about that.
See?
Because, like, I don't know.
Well, I mean, and this is actually a thing.
Nicole Lee reviewed a sous vide for us, and she kind of made that step sound really easy. And I read that and was like, oh, I don't know how to vacuum seal a bag.
So I had to Google that as well. But here's why, is because when I got the sous vide, I actually have Nicole's review unit. That's what's sitting in my kitchen currently.
Oh, interesting.
I see.
Because I was doing the Cooking with Watson series for a while before it just became way too much. That got real out of hand real quick, and it was just not a thing we could continue, unfortunately. I would really love to bring it back at some
point. What is that? I don't know what that is.
So Watson, the IBM supercomputer, wrote a cookbook, basically.
Oh.
They partnered with, I forget the chef's names, two chefs from the International Culinary Institute and somebody else, and basically they...
Watson gave the okay on...
Yeah, Watson spit out, like, a general idea of a recipe, and then the two chefs kind of tweaked it to make sure it made sense, like, really ironed out the fine details of, like, measurements and, like, did some interpretation on things.
I'm upset that, like, machine learning platform, like, knows way more about cooking than I do.
So they they sent me this book to the office, and I was like, you know what? I'm just going to cook my way through this book. I'm just going to grab it, start with page one, and start cooking everything in it. That worked for about 2 months, because all of the recipes in it, like, there's some relatively simple ones, but most of them were like, I had to go to the International Culinary whatever, and they like took me in and like taught me things. Mm-hmm. They were like, so this is how you like create food spheres, and this is how you create olive oil powder. Didn't know that was a thing. Showed me the proper way to use like gelatin stuff. It was every week I was spending minimum 3 to 6 hours like prepping and cooking this one dish, and then would spend another hour to 2 hours photographing said dish, and then it was probably about an hour or two of writing to go on top of that. And it was like, oh, I'm spending like 12 hours a week on this one story, and honestly, some of the stuff was not very good.
I'm deeply against this. I'm deeply against this.
Yeah.
So, but Dane, I was gonna ask though, like, where did you turn for recipes? Like, I think it's such a hard thing to like. You need, I think, in daily life, like, people need to like vet recipes. You know?
So it's been a combination. The crowdsourcing from friends, family, and coworkers. And
totally.
Coworkers who are my friends has been really fun because it just is. I can share the results. Terrence has given me a couple recipes. And yeah, so I've enjoyed that. But I've also joined newsletters of places like, Martha Stewart.
Yeah.
And, you know, Cooking Light, Food and Wine. And then
I never until this
Serious
moment.
Eats. Epicurious.
Even, like, conceptualize a recipe newsletter, but that sounds so
I was
awesome.
Just going to ask. I was like,
that
I didn't know that was
so
a thing.
Cool.
Oh, and I mean, that, and then I'm also, I was already active on Pinterest, but now food is taking up a lot more of my Pinterest. Before, it was just home, fantasy home stuff. And then Pinterest is really good at gleaning what you like. And, in my case, it's like, oh, you like cheese and carbs. Have some more cheese and carbs with
that
your
sounds
carbs.
Like, see, this is the missing piece. I have never really known what to use Pinterest for personally.
Yeah.
Cheese and carbs, though.
Oh, and I mean,
I am on board.
Now I have multiple recipe boards. It was unwieldy for just one, so now I have baking, I have entrees and appetizers.
So that was my big question for you, is how do you kind of track and organize these things? Because it's only so good to get the recipes from your friends and family, make them, and then forget them. Like, you've got to have a way to organize that and build a repertoire.
I have a few. So I have Pinterest, but I also I have an old-fashioned wooden recipe box in my kitchen with index cards. And I'm probably less, when I want to figure out what's for dinner, I'm probably more likely to turn to Pinterest and whatever I've stored on either there or in my Chrome bookmarks. Mm-hmm. They're kind of all over the place, but I do have some things written on index cards. That was satisfying. So this is backtracking a little bit, but one of our Adult Week stories this week was about the joy of purging, specifically mm-hmm. digital purging. I had been doing some real-life purging where I had just torn out recipes from magazines and people had sometimes scrawled them on paper for me. And it was just sitting in a drawer and I wasn't touching any of it. So my hope was that transcribing all of it on neater index cards and putting them in one place would make it a little easier for me.
Yeah.
I was not about that story. I liked all the other stories. It's not that I didn't like the story. I'm just like so pro hoarding. I think.
Are you a hoarder?
Oh, not in real life, but in terms of digital stuff, like
you just never get rid of anything.
It's not that. Well, no. And the I think there's a couple different reasons about it. I just philosophically was so. It feels like I'm like confronting the story. I think the story was great, and you guys should absolutely read it. But from a like lifestyle standpoint. I completely don't believe in this, and I think for a couple different reasons. The first reason is that, like, I just fundamentally believe that, like, if you're having problems with, like, a lot of digital stuff, you got to spend that time organizing it. And I know that some people they're just not interested in that.
Yeah.
And for them, I would say, like, you should probably just purge it.
Yeah.
But at the same time, like, I mean, the level of data integrity that I have is, I think, very cool. Like, there's no photos that get deleted. There's no screenshots that get deleted. There's no videos that get deleted. I have basically every if this, then that statement. Like, every time I leave and come into Brooklyn, there's a line in a spreadsheet that gets logged. Like, it's all logged and it's all organized. And, like, I think there is a way to do it.
Well, I think that's
I'm all about the purging, the digital purging.
I'm like a weird happy medium between the two of you. But I mean, I think that's sort of a thing you have to come to confront, though, right?
Is yes.
At some point you have to say to yourself, what kind of person am I? And I think that's, you know, the piece about digital purging, I think, is largely about Dan Cooper wrote that as well, about kind of confronting the fact that, you know what, I don't really need any of this.
Right.
It's horribly disorganized. I'm not the guy who's going to tag stuff, put it in folders, keep it organized properly.
Oh, yeah.
And I mean, coming back to Nicole's story about how she's been using services like Stitch Fix, you could also use something like Trunk Club. I think one of my other reasons for not using them is that I would just be accumulating
stuff.
More stuff.
Yeah.
When I'm trying to do in real life, not just my digital life, but my physical life, the opposite.
Yeah. See, I'm at a place where I'm constantly trying to get rid of some stuff just so I can bring other stuff in. I have like a really like solid like one in one out policy.
That's good.
I think that is an adult way of thinking about stuff.
But I also have a lot of crap, like a lot. Like
yeah,
I am not a minimalist. I'm not a guy who moves with a garbage bag.
Yeah. Well, I mean, yeah. Right now, I'm on the very low like number of things front, and yeah, those subscription services are like designed to just fill your house with crap. But digitally. You can just buy.
I want to hear about your system, though.
Well,
because I think this is kind of the interesting, like, adulting part of it.
Sure,
it's like learning to organize all of that.
So first and foremost, I think the most important thing is to get a really good handle on the influx of things. So like, you've got a couple of places where chaos is going to happen, and that's like your downloads folder and your desktop. And for that, I use like one of the reasons why I just like am so viciously like a Mac user.
Viciously?
Yeah, viciously a Mac user. That was both English and like cogent.
What is a vicious Mac user?
Well, I would somebody like if you were like you can either accept this job and use a Windows PC, or you can like be out in the street and be like, well, I don't know, the street's fine. It's not that bad.
Park but bench no. looks cozy.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. But no, I mean, one of the reasons is that like there are these utilities, one of which is a utility called Hazel. And Hazel, if you can be in love with software, I'm in love with Hazel.
So
all it is a rule-based like movement system. So
okay.
like so you can set up nested rules for your downloads folder. So like if it is a spreadsheet and it is older than a week old and it's prefixed with the word Facebook, sort it into sorted downloads / spreadsheets / Facebook exports, which is like a inside look at like what I do for work. But like once you have that under control, like once you have the bulk of the rules set up for your downloads folder and your desktop, it becomes so much easier to manage everything else because you're not kind of like quagmired in a bunch of digital stuff. And then like outside of that, one of the biggest challenges that I think that isn't solved yet is like media storage as well, like for pictures and video. And the best I've ever been able to do is just Apple Photos.
And how much storage from them are you willing to pay for?
I pay for 2 terabytes.
Okay.
But I have every single image and video that I've and screenshot that I've ever taken since 2012.
So how easy is it though to find what you're looking for in that massive collection?
Oh my god. Well, if it's organized, it's easier than you'd think, but like that is a problem that has yet to be solved. Like for my image library, for the longest time, 1 terabyte was the most you could actually buy on Apple Photos. And so I had to actually offload everything from high school and college onto Blu-rays. What is the retention mechanism or the recall mechanism for a Blu-ray? Like, I would have to travel 1,000 miles to where my Blu-rays are stored, get a Blu-ray drive, and then restore it. But, you know, if we can get like personal here, if we can go deep on the psychological aspect of this, I think one of the things that spurred on this behavior was the fact that I grew up right in a moment where cameras were garbage.
Mm-hmm.
Like there are no childhood pictures of me because like film got really expensive right after I was born. And then like digital cameras were like the absolute worst. Like it's truly god awful.
Mm-hmm.
Right up until like I went for college. So like I don't exist, but
I mean, if you ask Dan Cooper, that's not a bad thing.
Do now. Yeah, that's true. That's true. But this is, you know, this is why I do social.
Yeah.
Yeah. Ego.
I admire and envy your dedication to keeping things organized. I wish that I had the tenacity to keep that sort of level of organization. The maintenance part of things like that is always what kind of drives me nuts.
Well, I mean, like, it's hard. Like, when you realize that you have made a rule and an information architecture error, where like you're like, okay, well, I have all these things, they're stored in a particular hierarchy, and now that hierarchy is wrong or doesn't match the hierarchy I want going forward. You're like, what do? Do you like spend 2-3 weekends like updating and renaming a bunch of files or like writing scripts to do that for you? Like that's when it gets to be like, shit, am I dedicated to this cause or should I throw my computer in the garbage?
You kind of enjoy that stuff.
I personally do. But there have also been times where I'm like, what if I just like walked away from this thing? I never end up doing it, but there are some times where I'm like, I could slide this computer in the trash.
I feel like the fact that you were an econ major explains a lot about you and your tendencies and interests. Yeah.
I think it does too.
Guys, there's a taxonomy, and it lives in a folder called sorted downloads.
I don't know.
I don't know if that's adult. Maybe that's just a psychosis.
Well, I mean, it's learning to get your life under control, whatever that means, whether that's learning to delete all of the stuff or learning to keep it organized so that it's actually useful. Because, I mean, there's that danger of becoming a hoarder. Like, and I don't mean that necessarily as a person who's going to have dead cats everywhere under
the couch. Yeah. No, totally.
I guess you've never watched Hoarders?
It gets bad.
Okay.
It gets worse than
Dana, we have another homework assignment for you.
Oh yeah,
we have a homework. Dana had a homework assignment last night, which we're going to discuss later.
Yeah,
but we have another one for you, which is watch a couple of episodes of Hoarders, because that is an entire pop culture thing you have missed out on.
That's true,
and you need to understand it. Okay. You don't need to watch the show. You don't need to watch every episode.
I'm sure there's some YouTube clips that would really like blow your mind. Because it's not like my parents. My parents have too many things because they've moved houses and had three kids. Like, they have too many things. And they have, like, you know, they're in storage. They're, like, relatively under control. But, like, there's too much stuff.
Yeah.
And they, like, know that. But this is a different thing.
Yeah. My parents are the same way. Like, there's too much stuff. We have, like, we basically have a small computer museum in the basement at this point.
Oh, my God, dude. Yes.
Which is great. But, like, it's also, like, kind of a disorganized mess.
Yep.
But there's also not dead animals hiding anywhere.
Exactly. There's a limit.
Yeah.
There's a limit. Dead animals is real.
Yeah.
Trash. Dead animals. Dead animals in the trash. It's a whole, yeah.
It's a whole thing.
I don't think I'd feel very relaxed watching
this. You wouldn't. It's horrifying.
No, it's a particular type of, like, cringe TV where you're like,
yeah,
I could watch something else, but I also can't take my eyes off this.
So one thing I did want to kind of briefly talk about, we are kind of starting to run out of time, unfortunately. We keep letting ourselves get sidetracked. It's been a good conversation, but we are just like all over the place.
But I feel like we've closed most of the parentheses by now.
Yes. The one thing we did not touch on at all, and since you're here, Evan, I figure you're a good person to kind of talk about this, which basically, like, lay some ground rules how to be, like, a grown-up on Twitter.
Sure.
And, I mean, in social media in general, it's, like, basic ways to behave, basic ways to kind of not even protect yourself, but, like, control who can see what. I've thrown plenty of shade on our president before on this show, so I'm not going to shy away from doing it now.
Right.
The man acts like a child on Twitter.
Exactly.
And it's like, I think that's a pretty clear example of, like, if you're going to be a professional adult who expects to be respected and taken seriously, that's not the way you conduct yourself.
Right. And I think anybody who has ever applied for a job and has, like, an active social media presence has probably curtailed their behavior or modified their behavior while that process is ongoing. And I think that is probably a good way of starting to look at this, right? Like, there's something to be said for, like, can you really be, like, the irreverent, like, comedy star on social media? And I'm really talking about, like, mostly Twitter, but it also comes down to, like, are you venting about, like, coworkers on Facebook? Like, that stuff exists, and it's also very hard to maintain privacy controls over everything. That's kind of goes back to, like, the sprawling kind of digital nature that we live in. Like, the only really effective way to be the person that you want to be on social is to just actually be that person. If you have to go back and kind of, like, do a cleanup round, you're probably not going to find everything.
Yeah. I think the tough thing is that we each have a different red line. So for me, in the periods when I've been single, it's been my dating life. I really don't like to post about that on Twitter. But I'll post about other personal things that I'm really not ashamed for people to see. But maybe that's because I just don't feel that personal.
Yeah.
Like, I don't care if you know I'm binge watching, whatever.
No, and I think that it is a tough and it's an ever evolving line. Like, somebody that is just, like, one of my favorite people ever posted a picture of him just in his socks, having broken his glass, bathroom scale. And, like, the reality is like that. It's like a picture that he took, like, probably not wearing anything except a butt socks, but, like, in his bathroom, like, conceptually weird picture, but, like, it's so funny. Like, it has such a great caption and is totally innocuous.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But yeah, there's also like, posting about someone that, like, this was a Vice story, which should not surprise anyone, but someone, like, live tweeted, like, a whole round of, like, Tinder dates that they had, and, like, go figure. I don't think, it wouldn't be very fun to be, like, the other person to be like, oh, interesting feedback that you had on your Twitter account.
Yeah, I wouldn't do that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think that's sort of the thing that people struggle with. And honestly, I've we all have, I'm sure, said shit on social media that you probably shouldn't have. Like, just caught up in the moment, you go, this is me, this is my platform to just vent and say whatever.
Yeah.
And you say something you probably shouldn't have, or somebody about somebody who's probably going to see it.
This is why I truly do, I mean, for all of, I mean, for all of its flaws, Twitter is one of my favorite networks, and it really stems from the fact that it is public by default.
Yeah.
Like, you just, it, that is a good, like, start from zero, like, realize that this is you shouting into the void.
Yep.
And, like, that's actually good. Where you get into trouble is on Facebook, where you think that you're just, like, posting among friends, or you really don't have control or understanding of where everything is going to end up. And, like, people oftentimes don't even mean to be mean. But, you know, if you say the wrong thing in the wrong context, like, it's easy, especially with text-based stuff, to just come off the wrong way. Or, you know, like, if you're posting and you think that only your friends are looking at it, and but, like, a future employer or somebody who, or your boss right now decides, like, let's take a scroll back.
Yeah.
Like, that's why I deleted my Facebook account from college, because, like, nobody needs that.
Yeah.
Including me. Including and especially me. And it was, yeah, so that was actually great, because that was just a fresh start. Like, it's, my Facebook now is, like, way closer to LinkedIn in terms of functionality.
Yeah.
Where before it was, like, a different type of thing.
I was just bad at Facebook. I mean, well, I think we all just used it very differently maybe 8 years ago.
Yeah.
So Facebook's on this day feature just sometimes gives me really terrible,
oh, God,
inane things I said. That's, not that I'd be embarrassed by, but just I don't.
It's emotional terrorism.
I don't know why I posted it.
Yeah. I've had a couple of those crop up recently. I think for the most part, I've done a pretty good job of, like, kind of keeping my social media presence reflective of the person I want people to at least think I am.
Yeah.
That is an interesting, I'm glad that you mentioned that, because one of the reasons why Snapchat is so popular right now is that you can be kind of your actual self on Snapchat, because it does expire. It is, like, somebody would have to go through a lot of effort to, like, they'd either have to jailbreak their phone or hook it up to their computer and, like, screenshot or, like,
yeah,
screen capture it to really, like, get all of your stuff. It's, like, it's a very high bar for maintaining a trail,
yeah,
even though it's technically possible.
Technically possible, but it's not easy.
Yeah, no, and I mean, and that's the, in terms of, like, being an adult on social, what that means is that because there is this paper trail on Twitter and Facebook, like, you are going to present kind of, like, your aspirational self.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, that's actually probably a good thing. You know what I mean? Like, the nobody expects that you're going to be as cute as you are on Instagram or as smart as you are on Twitter all the time.
To be clear, I'm not super smart on Twitter. That's not a thing.
You know. And I think it's actually okay. And I would also say that, like, the piece about keeping your kids off of social, like, as somebody that does not have kids and probably won't for a little while, I do think it's very interesting to conceptualize.
Yeah.
Because, like, in another way, like, maybe that would be, like, a great solid. Like, maybe being proactive and, like, where do you learn, right? Like, you learn by making mistakes, and, like, I don't know. I certainly shouldn't have been trusted to like, be on the internet as a 13-year-old.
Oh, yeah, probably.
Like,
not.
But also my parents didn't, like, actually know what was the internet. It's not that they didn't know what the internet was, but, like, I was on, like, gadget forums and stuff,
mm-hmm,
like, programming forums, like, who knows what happened. No one should, but at the same time, like, you know, you do stupid crap, and God forbid anyone finds those posts. But, you know, how do you learn about that stuff? They don't teach about, like, how to be an adult on social,
yeah,
in schools. Like, they don't even teach you how to balance your checkbook.
No. I mean, the social thing that the I think is something that probably could and should be taught in schools. And I feel like the balancing a checkbook thing, like, these are skills that understandably aren't really taught in schools. Where are you going to do that? But I think, you know, something like the digital literacy stuff, that's something that can probably...
I would love that. That would be...
pretty clearly easily be worked into, like, partially in an English class, or, I mean, I'd argue some of it would go into health, probably.
Mm, yep.
So, I
mean,
know.
I'd love to have a social media component of, like, a health class.
Mm-hmm.
That would be so good. guys, social media is actually bad. Just in case,
It's a terrible place.
It's actually not a good invention.
It's the worst, but also the best.
I mean, you can get the dankest memes, maybe not on demand, but like pretty damn close. And that's got to be worth something, right?
Sure, why not? Before we kind of move on to the wind down, any last thoughts on technology and being an adult?
Don't be afraid to Google hard.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's good advice. Just YouTube and Google exist for a reason.
Oh, yeah.
And also, you know, there are other humans. Ask Twitter. Don't be afraid to, like, source other people's opinions that way.
True. Also, don't get medical advice from the internet.
No.
Yeah.
As someone who gets unwanted opinions on Twitter, even when I am specifically not asking a question, I would say do not ask Twitter questions.
Well, I think it depends on what you're asking. If you're not asking a question and you're getting opinions, that's not okay. But if you're asking for specific advice, and as long as you're asking for the right kind of information, Twitter can be useful. I've definitely, like, asked people, like, I don't know where to get this done in my neighborhood.
This comes back to the broadcast medium, though. Like, Twitter being inherently public, like, maybe not the best place for a question that's, like, specific like that. Facebook groups are actually, like, incredibly powerful for that.
Yeah.
But, yeah. Like, the nature and design of the social network, like, I mean, yeah, you can't see me, if you're listening to this, like, in your car, you can't see me, like, grimacing at the at the thought of, like, even solicited opinions sometimes on Twitter. But, yeah, small groups
can be
good.
I would never ask Twitter for, like, their opinion on, like, how I look or anything like that. Like, I really don't want to do that. But, like, I asked Twitter the other day for advice, for trying to pick, like, a new guitar amp, because the one that I own currently is a giant monstrosity that is way too loud for a one-bedroom apartment, and the other one I have is a cheap piece of crap that probably shouldn't cost more than $5 and is literally unplayable. Yeah. So it's like, I need a new one. I need a small practice amp. Somebody point me in the right direction, because I have been out of the game on this stuff for quite a long time.
Did you get some recommendations?
I got a couple of recommendations. I've made my decision, I believe. It is not one of the ones that was recommended to me.
Sure, but they got you started.
They got me started. Pointed me in a good direction.
And I mean, I'm joking around, but I have put out calls for, like, you know, what is good on Netflix right now?
Yeah.
Like, you know, what kind of... like, what kind of movies should I watch? And, like,
ask that sort of thing.
That's great. Like, sometimes that works. Other times, you know.
The most important piece of advice, though, about being an adult on the internet, just to come back real quick to something you mentioned before, don't go on WebMD.
Don't go on WebMD.
Don't ever do that. That's just, like, literally the worst thing
Dr.
you can
Google.
Do.
Dr. Google, yeah.
Dr. Google's bad. But to Dana's point, though, I will say that, like, there are lots of, there are now, luckily, lots more cool things that you can do. Like, you can have a private Twitter account. Some tools at your disposal are banning and muting people.
Mm-hmm.
If you're on Tumblr, you know, you can also have private accounts there and keep that to limited people. So there are options, and I would say. Also, if you are someone who does find, like, venting on social to be, like, a therapeutic exercise, just lock that account. Just just hit that lock button
and
go to town.
To be fair, I use Twitter as a way to vent, but I also don't care. It's
Well, some people... have the privilege to do that, and others don't.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think I'm saying or doing anything that would necessarily get me in trouble. It's mostly, you know, throwing middle finger gifts at our president.
Yeah, I mean,
which I'm pretty okay
with.
You
never know. You never know. For Trump 2020, you never know. He might ban you from Twitter.
Yeah. It's probably for the better. It probably works out for everybody. Did you have something else to add, Dana?
No.
Okay.
No.
You looked like you were about to say something, and you were like, you know what? I'm just going to let it go. So it's time to move on to the wind down. We're kind of like make some recommendations. Like we said, you know, social media is good for that. We're going to spend a little extra time with Dana, so we're saving you for last.
Yay. Okay.
Evan, do you have anything specifically you want to recommend to the people? Anything you've been reading, watching,
yes.
enjoying?
So the, song that I have had just on repeat is Frank Ocean's Slide. And, just as like a social shout out, Genius's head of social, Josh Edwards, that's at Josh U Edwards on Twitter, has some of the best like they're not really explainers. They're like disassembly videos for music, and I just, you guys should check that out. Like, those are good.
Cool.
Awesome. I'm just going to recommend baseball, just like in all of its forms.
The concept of baseball?
Just the concept of baseball.
You may have heard of it.
It is the best, guys. You know, last night, well, I guess it'll be two nights ago by the time you're watching and listening to this, U.S. won the World Baseball Classic. That was an exciting series. It's a thing that gets shit on a lot, but it's baseball at its finest. Major League Baseball is about to start up. As April comes up, I'm going to be tweeting less about politics and a lot more about baseball.
And just, the Mets.
Yeah, so from one thing that nobody cares about my opinions on to another thing that nobody cares about my opinions on.
I just searched, when was baseball invented? I'm already I mean, like, who knows if this is accurate, but I mean, like, my goodness.
I mean, if you want a specific thing,
yeah,
watch Ken Burns baseball. Like, Ken Burns is excellent in general, but baseball, I think, is like his finest work. I think it's a little bit better than the Jazz one, definitely better than Civil War. It's just so good. So good.
This goes back to being just like an idiot and just Googling, but like, was baseball invented in New York?
I have no idea where baseball
is. I don't
know
the answer.
Google's automated and,
I would not be surprised,
admittedly not accurate in many cases, card that comes up says that it was invented in New York in 1839.
I mean, that sounds like it could be accurate.
It could be, but it could also be a deep Reddit troll.
Yeah.
You never know.
It could also be one of those things that's like highly controversial.
That's true.
We're going to end with you, Dana.
Okay.
I gave you some homework.
Yes, you did.
So you want to explain to the people what's going on here real quick?
Okay, so anyone who knows me, especially my coworkers, know that there is a long list of pop culture stuff, especially movies, but we covered Hoarders earlier, some TV shows that I have not seen for whatever reason. As this was my idea. You gave me homework, but I actually asked you to, going forward,
yes,
give me assigned viewing each week. And help me catch up. Find a movie you feel I should have seen that I can stream on Netflix or Amazon, and I'll watch it.
Yeah.
So to kick things off this week, you assigned me
Jurassic Park.
Jurassic Park.
Such a good choice, by the way.
It was.
In terms of all the like classics,
this was
you could
a pretty
stream.
Big one. Like, it was pretty high on the list of stuff where if I told, especially men in my life that I hadn't seen the movie, they'd get angry at me. Yeah.
I mean, it's fair.
Yeah.
Well, what'd you think?
I mean, it's okay.
Yeah.
I mean, so I enjoyed it more than I thought, but it's... I know you guys are attached to it. I think if I saw it as a kid, I would have been either disinterested and or a little afraid. I looked it up. I was 8.5 when it hit theaters.
Like, actually, it's scary.
Oh, yeah.
Like,
I mean,
coming after the car? Yeah.
Have you seen my live tweets about this?
I did see up until the car part, yeah.
Yeah, so...
Your live tweets, by the way, are pretty great. I wish there was more of them.
I lost steam after about halfway through the movie. Because, there's nothing about the velociraptors in my tweets. It's mostly about...
You end with Newman as a bad hombre.
He is a bad hombre. Bad dude. He got everything he deserved.
I think my favorite, though, is still just... OMG, this T-Rex.
Yeah.
Just says it all. That's just...
Well, what did you think about the animatronics?
I think they've held up fairly well. I do know that if my parents had permitted me to see this in theaters as a kid, it would have scared the shit out of me.
Yeah.
But so, I guess my thing about the movie is it feels a little generic to me, even compared to other Steven Spielberg movies.
Yeah.
It was funny to watch this in 2017 because I was reading it with my smartphone in hand. I was sort of Googling things all through the movie, and I read that Steven Spielberg wanted this to be a sort of sequel to Jaws, except on land.
Right.
Yeah.
And by the way, I haven't seen Jaws.
I actually also.
I'm sorry, Terrence. Jaws. I'm sorry. This is why we're doing this recurring segment.
Oh my god. Okay. That is your viewing for next week.
Do I have to? Anyway. I haven't seen Jaws, but I imagine it's probably a superior film to Jurassic Park.
It is, 100%.
And, yeah, so it felt generic compared to other Steven Spielberg movies I've seen. But also, I don't really understand why people revere Jurassic Park more than, let's say, Armageddon. It had the same plot structure, right? And it's similar narrative devices where most people survive, but a few people get knocked off and killed along the way. I mean, that's like... a really predictable...
I'm twitching on the inside right now. I just want you to know.
I
you
think
are.
It's just... Lots. I have also a laundry list of, like, especially, particularly books, but also movies. And it definitely happens all the time where someone's like, you must watch this. But you'll never be able to, like, see it as an 8-year-old like they saw.
What I like best about Jurassic Park was, I think, John Williams' music. The music
is amazing.
The parts of the movie where I felt most engrossed in a way or felt anything resembling an emotional response probably were spurred on by the music. There was not much in the way of character development or good writing, which is important to me otherwise.
I mean, I disagree with that, but continue.
Yeah, I mean, I felt that you watched Jurassic Park, and I watched it ultimately for the special effects, the suspense, and the music helped with the suspense.
So can I ask real quick before we continue, what did you watch it on? Do you have, like, a nice big TV? Were you, like, watching it on your laptop?
No, you know, you're not the first person to ask me that. People really seem concerned that I wasn't getting a theater-like experience. I have a nearly 40-inch, it's like a 37-inch TV. I have a Roku stick. So I watched it on my television.
Okay.
But I don't have a surround sound.
Is your television an IPS panel or no? Okay.
It's an old TV.
How close were you to this 37-inch TV?
Can you give us, like, the pixel depth that you were watching it in?
I was a few feet away. But people did seem concerned, a little let down, that I wasn't seeing it with THX sound.
I mean, that would be cool, but who has that?
Right.
Here's what I'll say is, you're not going to get the theater experience. And even if you did, it would only make some difference, probably, at the end of the day. I think going to the theater and watching it, having seen it as a child, would definitely bring back memories. It's a very nostalgic kind of thing. But if it's your first time experiencing it, while it does hold up, it's not the mind-blowing thing it was in, what, 1994? '93. So, I mean,
ideally, you have, like, I mean, here, well, not here, but, like, in Brooklyn, there are a bunch of different theaters that will play classics all the time. That is totally great. I mean, but if you don't live in a place like Brooklyn, like, what are you going to do? Like, you know, like, unless you have a home theater set up, the new 65-inch OLED, guys, it's only $6,000. It's totally fine. I guess what we're saying is just don't watch movies.
I mean, I'm glad I saw it. I just don't quite see what the hype is about. And also, I know I've been told that I'm supposed to really be into Jeff Goldblum after this, but...
No.
No.
That's just a meme.
It is?
Yeah.
Okay.
He's like a sexy man, but, like...
Is he?
Not like in the literal way.
He's a weird dude.
Yeah.
He basically plays the same character in every movie.
I know. I get that.
It's
It works really well in that movie, to be fair. But yeah.
He's hot in, like, the platonic idea of what hotness is.
Is he?
Like, well, I guess in that he thinks it really hard, and then it comes
is
out.
Is that what it is? Yeah. It's a confidence thing? Yeah. It's like he just believes it so hard.
He's thinking about the conceptual notion of hotness so hard that it's just, like, steaming out.
Well, I'm glad you watched it. I'm glad that you at least enjoyed it a little bit. The fact that you compared it at all to Armageddon, it makes my head explode.
I can see that.
Honestly, it's just, like, insane to me. Insane to me.
RIP my mentions, probably, because people are eventually going to hear this. And
Devendra might strangle you.
Uh-oh. Maybe. I mean, you never know. He might come in and be like, yeah, I don't know. It's okay.
I mean, I'm just going to throw it out there that Armageddon is a piece of shit.
I haven't seen that movie. What happens in that movie?
That's Armageddon is the one with...
I mean, clearly in Armageddon.
Steve Buscemi... Bruce Willis, right?
Steve Buscemi's in that movie?
I believe so. I believe that's the Steve Buscemi, Bruce Willis one where they have to go try to redirect the asteroid or whatever.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Right? That's with the horrible Aerosmith song.
Oh, God, it's so good.
I mean,
and like
Ben Affleck, sorry. Thank
yes,
you.
Yes. Bruce Willis is like, I'm a middle American.
No, but what's the
man.
Other one? That's the Bruce Willis is the other one? There's, like, two movies that are basically the same that came
out
exactly
the same.
They're all
generic. You're kind of proving my
point.
Wait,
I can't remember.
See, those two are generic, though. So, Jurassic Park predates those by a pretty significant margin.
Yeah, it's the asteroid one. Okay.
But
yeah.
Jaws predates and I haven't seen Jaws, but I will for next week.
Yes.
Jaws predates Jurassic Park by a significant margin. So, like, isn't Jurassic Park generic of itself?
No, not necessarily. Whoa. I mean,
even
there's,
for Steven whoa. Spielberg?
I mean, by that standard, all kind of like suspense monster movie kind of things are in a way generic.
They are.
Like, just, I mean, they are to an extent, but if you do it really well, it's about the
execution. Oh, then, yeah.
It's totally about the execution. It's like, have you ever seen, I know you haven't, so I don't even know why I'm asking
Which
you,
movie?
Dana. Have you seen The Host?
No.
Okay, never mind. I believe it's a Korean film. I could be wrong about that, but monster movie. It's great. But, I mean, it's also like a dumb suspense monster movie, but it's just the way it's executed, the way it's filmed, the music, the performances, the way the whole thing is edited together that actually keeps the suspense up. Like, there's no suspense in Armageddon in a movie like that. You know people are going to survive and who's going to survive the entire time. You know the day is going to be saved by whoever.
A good monster movie that you could probably find for $2 bootlegged at the bodega is, oh God, which is the, I forget the name of it now.
I don't know.
I can't believe it. It's not The Room. It's Cabin in the Woods.
Cabin in the Woods is excellent, but that is also a different beast.
It sort of is.
I did actually rewatch that fairly recently.
I'm gonna cross Jaws off my list first.
Yeah,
cross Jaws off. We can do The Room. Cabin
is,
in the Woods.
The Room is very different.
The Room is a very different
That's
movie.
That's very different which, than Cabin in the Woods.
Which also we might have to make Dana watch at some point.
I specifically asked Terrence not to give me anything too violent or scary, but we're clearly going to start with the Jaws and...
I mean, if Jaws and Jurassic
Silence
Park...
Silence of the Lambs is coming up.
If those are too violent and scary
That's
for you...
That's good. I mean, those...
Those are all those great
seem,
movies,
Those
though.
Seem chill. The Room is upsetting.
The Room is
it's
amazing.
Upsetting. I don't know if I would watch it again.
Wait, are you speaking about Room or The Room?
The...
You're speaking of the Brie Larson one, right? Which is Room.
Yeah.
That's a different movie.
With the daughter.
Yeah, that's a different movie than I'm talking about. Okay. I'm talking about The Room with Tommy Wiseau, which is...
Oh, yes!
One of the greatest things
definitely.
Ever
definitely. Yeah. Boy, that's
just,
worth
just,
that's
just
worth,
trust
that's
me,
worth
Dana.
Your time right
that's,
there.
That is.
Okay. Should we open this up to listeners, do you think?
Yes.
And just have them make nominations for what my assigned viewing should be?
Yes, I think so. Idea. We should open it up, make suggestions. We'll kind of weed through it. We'll act as the...
Once we have some, I will do a Twitter poll.
Okay.
And we'll get some...
The qualification. So I subscribe to Netflix and Amazon. I don't mind spending a few bucks to rent something, but I have to be able to access it through Netflix or Amazon Prime Video.
Okay. We can make that
work.
I think that's as good a place to wrap it up as any. Please send your recommendations and suggestions. You can send them to the podcast. It's at Engadget Podcast on Twitter. You can also send them directly to Dana Woolman.
Thank you.
And what is your Twitter handle so that people can just spam you with this stuff?
It's my full name.
It's over now.
Full name recently turned off to Twitter eggs. So don't be a Twitter egg, please.
Can they send you recommendations as well for Dana, Evan?
Yeah, no, absolutely. It's at Evan Rogers. There is a D in that Rogers. It's Rogers the D. So there you go.
Also, send me recommendations for Dana. I'll help collate these and... We'll figure out what she needs to watch next for her homework assignment. I'm at Terrence O'Brien, lots of E's, no A's. Please subscribe to the podcast in your app of choice, whether that's iTunes, Pocket Cast, Google Play, whatever. Give us a rating because that's, works out for us. More people find the show, and we like it when people listen to the show. It's a good thing. So thank you for tuning in. Thank you guys for joining me, and we'll be back next week with, more mindless nonsense. We'll probably talk about news next week, actually, as opposed to this weird rambling thing.
This is great.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Cheers.